And so not much of the original painting is there. What you're seeing is recreation, if you will. Yeah. And it was an epiphany for me, because it's considered one of the most beautiful pieces of art in the world. You know, if you talk about, well, what are the top five pieces of art, that usually comes up as one of them. Right. And I thought at the moment, if Da Vinci could do something that's imperfect, why do I hold myself to this standard and drive people crazy around me by always trying to be perfect?
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo. And every episode, we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey, friends, welcome back. We are about to get awkward. It's the Own Your Awkward show. And right now, I am super, super excited to bring you an amazing guy, Jeff Eichler. Jeff hosts a podcast of his own. He does amazing things. You have to read his writing online. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, it's finally a nice day here in New York City. We had, wrath of God for about 3 or 4 days. And luckily, I live in an area of Queens, New York, called Forest Hills. And it's literally a hill. And so we did not suffer the flooding that other areas of New York City did, but the subways got flooded, a hospital got flooded, and transportation was snarled. So, but it's sunny here and it's supposed to be 72, 74 today. So it's all good.
Things are looking up.
And Notre Dame won last night.
Oh, well, there you go.
Go
all
Irish.
All the important things are happening, right?
Exactly.
Oh, that's funny. I saw a video with the flooding, and it was just, wow, this just looks unreal.
Yeah, and it's funny, Andy, because while it was raining here, and again, because we are literally on a hill, all the water was rushing down, so it wasn't collecting anywhere for us. But it was just, it was very bad for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I hope everybody recovers well and gets through it. That's not, it's interesting when you see things where, you know, we build these cities, right? And we have this civilization and we think we've covered everything that nature could throw at us. And then you see this just act of, you know, Mother Nature just pouring down, whether it's an earthquake or a tornado. And it's like, there's no getting around that.
Exactly.
Well, you know, with all of that going on and with, you know, nature throwing stuff at you and the sunshine coming out, I like to start out asking my guests, what's the most positive thing you see going on in the world? Because we get surrounded by so much negativity. I'd love to hear your take on it, on something good going on right now.
Yeah. So what immediately comes to mind is an initiative that Dennis Patoko and Peggy Wilms have underway concerning homelessness.
Yeah.
And it's very heartfelt. Those are two wonderful people, and I'm going to have an opportunity to participate as a podcaster.
I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, Dennis doesn't approach anything in a halfway measure. So it's really, that's a bright spot. That, mm-hmm. you know, where he's doing something, and what they're doing is giving, they have a big tent, if you will, and they're going to draw a lot of people into it to support the effort.
Mm. Yeah. That is very Dennis. I was just on a conversation with someone a couple of days ago who is a mutual friend with Dennis, and we were talking about something, and it was like, who is this guy? Like, he does so many amazing things. And my comment was, I can't even believe he's human, because he is always going. I could message him anytime, and within an hour he's replying. And it's like, do you sleep?
Yeah, right.
All in a good way, right? Like he's good, heartfelt, and you know, is so generous and is always finding something like this, like an amazing thing to help the world.
Right. He walks the talk.
He does.
Yeah.
It's the kind of person you want to look at, aspire to be, and really think, okay, how do I live that kind of life? How do I be that type of person?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Dennis, I know your ears are burning if you're listening. And that's an amazing project. And there's a book coming out. There's a lot of media around it. That's going to be an exciting thing.
Yep.
Now, are you going to be doing a special series on your podcast, or are you going to be talking to people that are in the book? Do you know the plan for that?
Yeah, it's to be determined. There was a meeting the week that I was gone. I was in Montana fly fishing and visiting our mutual friend Sarah Elkins, and they had a meeting of the media folks. So I missed that. So I've got to play catch up.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's it's well. I look forward to seeing it, and if you're listening or watching, check it out. We'll throw links in here. If they're not ready when the episode comes out, we'll go back and add them in, because that's an amazing project. So
very good.
Yeah. So, and yeah, speaking of another amazing person, Sarah Elkins, she's the reason we know each other. I was just thinking about Sarah a couple of days ago, because I have met so many people and grown in a good way since I have been connected with her, and I can't put a number, a quantitative value, whether it's monetary or well-being. It's hard. I was like, I wish I could sum up how good life has gotten since I've been connected with Sarah.
Exactly. Exactly. You probably do this, Andy, routinely. I just connected her with a podcast guest who has a completely inspirational story to tell. And wow. I believe Sarah would want to talk to her, and it felt so good to give back to Sarah, you know, to connect, you know, to actually connect her with somebody, because that's what she routinely does.
Yeah. I have, well, maybe I'll get it in the mail before she hears this, but I have a bottle of whiskey sitting here that I need to send her. And it's, but that seems so, doesn't even touch the value, you know, it's like, of what to give back to her.
That's the thought.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, we trade books a lot. That's how we send our love. So we trade books.
I love that. Yeah, I have a book here that when I was in Montana, she was like, read this. You know, she held up two books. Like, which one do you want to read? Go sit in the hammock and just relax for a while. I was like, I can help with dinner. She's like, no, this is your vacation. You go sit. I was like, this is not only an amazing person, but the consummate host. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she has a quote, Ed, that she told me, and maybe she got it from you, but that you're not done with a book until you give it away.
Oh, yeah. It's not for me, but I do keep some books on my shelf. I've been gradually getting rid of books. I've been donating them to a number of people, but I have a number of keepers, if you will.
Oh, fair. Yeah, as do I.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was one of those, like, here, take it. It's, I'm done with it. I've read it, and now I'm sharing it by letting someone else also
beautiful
enjoy it. So I can't remember beautiful. Who she said told her that, but I've loved that line. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So Jeff, we are about to get awkward. We got to know, what's your awkward thing that you've had to own in order to do all these amazing things you're doing?
Oh, well, the thing that comes to mind was, for most of my life, adolescent, college student, adult, was I had to be perfect.
Mm.
And we all have, you know, that inner voice that nags at us. And I used to drive people crazy, because if we were doing something at work, it had to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be perfect according to my standards, my view. And because I couldn't stand to turn something in that wasn't as best as it could be, you know? Sure. And sometimes the difference between very good and best is something that people won't even see. Mm-hmm. And it was unfortunate. I do know where it came from. And that was partly how I figured out how to overcome it.
Okay.
But I had an incident in 2019, revelation, an epiphany, mm-hmm. where my wife and I were in Milan, Italy, and we were looking at The Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
And you can get about 15 feet away from the painting. And the docent who was leading the group, you know, you're not allowed to get any closer than that. There's a railing, if I remember correctly. And she was whispering things about the painting as we were looking at it. And she said that Da Vinci used a very unproven method of painting The Last Supper. You know, normally they paint it on wet plaster, okay. and he painted on dry plaster. Mm. And because of the conditions in the room where he painted, it was an area where priests and monks would have their meals. So it had a certain amount of heat in that room. Then it became a stable, actually, for animals. And it during World War II, it was protected by sandbags, but there was a lot of bombing in that particular area. And what happened almost immediately, this is I'm getting to the point, Andy. I promise not to take
no, a whole you're, hour, this, you know. It's actually intriguing because I'm getting a visual of the whole process.
Yeah, you know what the painting looks like, right?
Yes.
And here's the docent saying, what you're looking at, approximately only 25% of the original painting is still there.
Mm.
What's wow. there now is what art conservatories or conservators have put in its place,
okay.
with the, you know, with the original colors. And what happens over time, she said, is that the paint flaked off because of how he painted it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so not much of the original painting is there. What you're seeing is recreation, if you will.
Yeah.
And it was an epiphany for me, because it's considered one of the most beautiful pieces of art in the world. You know, if you talk about, well, what are the top five piece of art, that usually comes up as one of them.
Right.
And I thought at the moment, if Da Vinci could do something that's imperfect, why do I hold myself to this standard and drive people crazy around me by always trying to be perfect?
Yeah.
And that may sound like, well, why didn't that come to you earlier? It never did. You know, mm-hmm. I knew where I had picked up the need for perfection. And as I said before, that realization did help me, but it was actually coming to something. It was like, you've heard the expression, a V8 moment. You remember the
oh, V8, yes.
you know, commercials, you know, you,
V8 today.
Yeah, exactly. You pop yourself in that forehead. It was like, well, if he could do something that's imperfect, don't be ridiculous and do your best. I'm not saying don't do your best, but it's like, it's never going to be perfect, and stop driving yourself and others crazy.
Yeah. Don't beat yourself up over it. I love that idea, that V8 moment, because there are things, I don't know how many times we've gotten the same advice or seen the same, you know, text over and over again, or learned a lesson, technically, you know, quote unquote, learned a lesson or heard the lesson, but maybe not learned it. And then something clicks one time where you just see it. And what I love about this is that this is something that you said was in the last 4 or 5 years. This wasn't that
exactly
long ago. And the light bulb clicks on, and yet you've lived life all the way up until now. And not that you haven't been maybe coming to terms with it, but all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's the thing. Like, that's what makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I wrote a piece not too long ago. It's called Letting Go of the One That Got Away.
Mm.
I was fishing in central Pennsylvania with my father-in-law, and I hooked into arguably the biggest fish I've ever hooked.
Oh, wow.
And fought it for maybe 15 minutes or so, was a huge rainbow, and it kept taking my line downstream, and I didn't follow it, which was a huge mistake, because the further away it gets from me, the more strain it's putting on the line. And eventually it went,
That's not a good sound.
And it's gone. And instead of saying, wow, that was great, what a struggle, you know, that was so interesting to hook that fish. And I actually saw him a couple times. It jumped a couple times. It's a beautiful fish. But I couldn't appreciate that because I had lost the fish.
Yeah. So you're hung up on the loss.
I had lost the fish. It wasn't that the fish had broken off. I had lost the fish.
Yeah, there's
so that's and that's recent, Andy. That was like 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
So
wow.
It stayed with me.
So when you had this, well, let me back up. So how did you, like you mentioned working with people and you having this standard that was like things have to be perfect and this is what we're aiming for. How did that affect your life, your relationships with others?
Well, in two words, not well.
Fair.
Yeah, it was, as I said, I used to drive people crazy. You know, I was in the book publishing business for 35 plus years. I worked for what was then the largest educational publishing company. You've heard the name Scott Forsman.
Yeah.
Prentice Hall, Pearson. I worked for that corporation. And there was a lot writing, obviously, on our books, because publishing in the school market is this interesting combination of doing something for schools, but it's also a commercial enterprise. Mm. Right? This was not a nonprofit enterprise. Right. So we want to do well by the schools, but we have to do well by the organization too. So there was a lot of pressure. And again, that my personality in that environment, we did very good work, but I know I drove people crazy.
That's fair. And I think it's sometimes when you're on the receiving end of that, it's hard to not just feel like, is Jeff just being a jerk? Does he not like me? Like,
exactly.
Is it never good enough for Jeff?
Yeah.
And yet, you know, from your perspective, it's not about the other person being bad at their job necessarily. Did you have situations where you had this realization that maybe your standards were a little bit either unrealistic or so high that they could never get met?
Well, I had the realization that it was impacting others.
Mm.
Okay. Because the organization, I can talk about this now, I couldn't initially, but the organization actually hired me a coach.
Okay.
And I started to work with a coach about my leadership style because it was not effective. The work that I was doing said to the organization, this guy's worth retaining, but we've got to help him overcome whatever he's doing from a leadership standpoint. And it was actually working with a coach that inspired me to become an executive coach.
Oh, interesting.
And I got my certificate from the same company that my coach had received his certificate from, because I saw the value in it.
Right.
I saw the firsthand value in talking with somebody and having that stuff pour out of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I think all too often in business, we have people we work with who are very good at a skill, which then gets them promoted into something they don't have the skill for or the experience, where it's like, you're our best salesperson, we're going to make you our sales manager. And then we realize, wait, they haven't had any leadership or management training. They're great in sales, but not managing people.
Yep, exactly. That I'm going to date myself here, but there was a book, a very popular book at one time called The Peter Principle.
Okay.
And it was all about promoting people one rung up above where their strong suit was, to your point, you know?
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that they can't attain the skills, that they're not valuable to be promoted, or that they don't have that's not the path that they should be on. It's just, we need to be cognizant of the fact that there is some additional training that they need. So it's great that your organization saw that and said, hey, this guy is valuable. We don't want to lose him. But in this role, we need to get him some help.
Yeah, exactly. You raise a very good point, Andy, about what a lot of organizations don't do, which is, you know, they focus on the work as opposed to the people doing the work.
Right.
And that was one of my issues. I was so focused on the work, getting the work right, because kids were going to use these books. Teachers were going to use these books.
Right.
And managers rise from the organization. I started in that organization as an editorial assistant, which is just one rung above getting coffee for people.
All right.
And I had worked my way up to a senior management position. But I had never been trained as a manager, as a people manager. It was always about the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easy. It's the natural tendency. I can understand why we look that direction, because that product, the output, that's the identity of the company. And so we think, oh, this has to be the focus. Yet if we don't focus on the people, then we can't really expect that we're putting out the best end result.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So how has life changed since you had this epiphany? I mean, and feel free to pick any spot, whether it was looking at the Da Vinci painting of the Last Supper, or whether it's earlier on where you said, oh, this is affecting people. I need to do something with it.
Well, I feel a lot lighter. I'll tell you that. Hmm. There's a lot less pressure. I feel much more aware. Okay. Because, I owe this in part to the coaching that I had and the coaching training that I went through, which is all focused on people. You know, right. It's focused on helping people help themselves. It's not that I'm providing direction in my coaching. I'm helping them find their direction. So that has helped take a huge weight off my shoulders, because ultimately the client is responsible for their growth. All I can do is put questions in front of them that help break through whatever brush, twigs, trees are lying in their way. Right. That's what my coach did for me, or at least started me on that road.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And did you, one thing that I found is that, you know, I preach this message of like, own your awkward and then just be yourself and do the thing. But one thing that I have found is that it's not a situation where you go, yep, I saw it. I had the V8 moment and now I moved on with life and I never look back. Do you have a tendency sometimes to just see something and go, oh, we've got to get this just perfect, and have to hold back?
That's a great question. There are times, I'll give you an example, Andy. There are times when I'm putting together the weekly podcast, mm-hmm. where I might have missed a thought in the introduction or in the conclusion.
Okay.
And I will record that thought and then splice it in.
Sure.
It does feel different to me.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, in a cavalier sense, I could say, oh, it's good enough, you know.
Sure.
But if it's not helping to make the point that the guest wanted to make, I'll take the time to put it in there. But it's got to be pretty serious for me to do that. 99% of the time, I do the best I can with the introductions, the conclusions, the editing, what have you, and it goes out. But there are times when I'll fix it. And I think anybody would want to do that, because it reflects on the guest.
Sure. Yeah. And that is one thing I heard somebody else make this comment either right before or after I was on your show, and I noticed it as well. But that out of any other podcast host, you are the most thorough with researching and preparing for your guests to be on. And now I know why, because when I hear you talk about this, I can see how this comes through, because it makes a big difference in the quality of work you put out or in the experience for the guest or the listeners.
Yeah. I mean, I interview a lot of people who come to the show having written books. And what I try to do is read at least part of the book or read about the book so that I'm informed about their work. And it's also beneficial to me because I don't look at being a podcast host as mechanical, you know, as just I'll throw a bunch of questions out, you answer, and then we're done. What I'm trying to do is also learn from the guest on the show. So yeah, I do a lot of preparation, but the other thing, Andy, is I'm retired. So I have a lot more time than a lot of hosts have because this is, I do this and I actually have a second podcast that I work with a team on. That one is cultivating resilience, a whole community approach to alleviating trauma in schools. And that one requires a lot of background effort because I don't know that topic as well as my team members. I've been brought on the team because of my podcast experience.
Oh, gotcha.
But I also do some of the interviewing, and I'm not going to go into that cold without doing research on the person. And if they've done a book, if they've written a book, I want to be familiar with it.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned like the reason you were brought on the team, because we sometimes don't give ourselves credit for the reason we're in a place, the value we bring. Like, I'm here because of this skill or experience I have, or personality, or whatever it is that you bring.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to go back to you standing in front of the Da Vinci, the Last Supper, with the docent whispering facts and you saying, okay, if it's good enough for Da Vinci, why isn't it good enough for me? Because one of the things I have learned to view myself, and I'm curious if this is the case with you, is where I feel like, no, it has to be good enough for, like, I have to be a level above everybody. I've come to see that as almost like, well, how important do you think you are? Or how special do you think you are that it has to be better than, and not in a be above, but in that search for perfection. That's kind of been my theme this year, has been to not let perfectionism hold me back. And not take action because it's got to be just right. And I had this realization about a month ago where I was working on something for my website and I didn't want to add this onto it yet because it wasn't perfect. And I thought, Andy, 5 or 10 people are going to see this.
Exactly.
This is not millions of people seeing this. The impact is not that great. If it's not where it is, you can still edit it and fix it. So is there an element for you where ego is involved, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Less and less. Mm-hmm. And I'll give a lot of credit to my engineer, Neil Hughes, lives in the UK. I've worked with Neil for 5 years now. And he's not just a techie guy. He's a great talking partner. And he knows podcasting in and out. And what's happened to me over time is, I think it's inevitable that you compare yourself to other podcast hosts to other shows. And there's a line between comparing and ruminating and learning from.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listen to a lot of podcasts and say to myself, what can I learn from this? What seems to be working for them? Versus beating myself. Why didn't I do that?
Right.
You know, I'd have more listeners if I had done that, you know? So I think that's the growth factor, is that you move out of the realm of trying to compare yourself to people and what can you learn from them?
No, I love that shift in perspective, because we can, you know, comparing, we always say don't compare, don't, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But there is value if you see it from the right perspective, where you say, okay, what can I take from this to enhance what I'm doing, to learn from it, to, you know, is there a skill set that I need to learn in order to get to that level? Because that's life. We're always growing and other people are doing things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how has it been since you have had this realization? I mean, I know you said that life is better. You're driving people crazy a little less.
Well, it's as I said, it's a lighter feeling. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed to be married to an individual who doesn't let me get away with anything. Because if I start down the perfection path, you know, I can hear virtual fingers drumming on the table. It's like, don't go there. Don't go there, buddy.
Yeah. Have they seen a difference in you?
I would say yes. Yeah, I would say yes. Where I'm more comfortable with good enough. I like to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. To believe that.
Yeah. It's interesting being in a relationship when you have this lifelong partner, whether it's a friend or your spouse or whatever level, where, you know, we meet people at a certain place in our life, but we're still on our journey to learn and experience ourselves. And so to have someone stick with you and see all the changes you're going through, where you say, okay, I'm still with you, even though you've changed. Is there something, and I'm getting a little off topic here, but is there something you find at the core of keeping that together?
I don't know. As you were asking, though, what came to mind was an incident, a conversation recently about it's another example where perfection no longer raises its head. Because in the past, being perfect meant I had to have all the answers.
Oh, right.
Because, you know, and this is a problem with a lot of leaders, is if you don't have the answers, you're going to look weak.
Right.
Right. People are hiring you as the leader to have the answers. Well, I've learned over time that that's BS, you know, that.
Right.
You actually, I think, get greater respect by saying to people, I don't have all the answers here. What do you think? Because people want to feel like they matter. Right.
Right.
So the recent conversation was actually with our mutual friend, Sarah, where I was relating a situation to her. It wasn't a situation about perfection. It was just one I hadn't been able to work through in my head.
Okay.
And the simple act of talking with her helped me come to some realization about what I was thinking.
Yeah. And sometimes just, you're right, having the conversation allows different questions to come up, different points of view to come in, and we may already have the answer in our head. We just can't see it because we've got too much information, or we're tied up on one piece of the story.
And yeah.
It's getting in the way from seeing what to do or the solution.
Right, right.
Yeah, I love that. And I really appreciate you calling out that leaders don't have to have all the answers, because I think that's an old school way of looking at things, where we think, okay, I got promoted because I was good at this job, so I must have every answer that's ever related to this job. And if that's the value I see as a leader, then as soon as I don't have an answer, do I no longer have value, and am I going to be let go or demoted or passed over?
Exactly.
Yeah. And yet the true value really comes from that, being confident enough to say, I don't know where we're going on this, guys. What ideas do you have? I'm going to lead us through the situation, but we're all here to fix it. And that's, I think about the times where I've had a leader, whether it's a boss or a group that I'm in, where they're like, you guys, we don't know what we're doing. We are up the creek, and can anybody find a paddle? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And all of a sudden the solutions come better, and you feel more valuable as a team member, because you feel like your contributions are heard, and it's not, well, if it's not Jeff's way, we know we don't even need to give him an idea, because he's not going to take it.
Yeah. I mean, that was actually visible at the time, Andy, where I, you know, people shut down.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. So Jeff, what is the best way? You've got your podcast, you've got all sorts of stuff out there. You're writing articles. What is the best way for people to support you, find you, you know, give you the love online?
So, excuse me, they can find the podcasts at my website is Quetico, Quetico. Quetico is a provincial park in southern Ontario where I used to go fishing with my teaching buddies at the end of the school year. And so it's a place of deep meaning for me. Quetico, coaching.com. They can find the podcast there. And yeah, that's really the best place.
Best spot. And if you're driving right now and not able to write that down, just click the link in the description as soon as you get to where you're going and check it out. As you can tell, Jeff's full of knowledge. That's awesome. One thing, when you talk about leadership, I used to work for an organization where the boss took somebody who had no knowledge or experience in our side of the business and said, they're the team lead. And it was a made up position, the team lead. It wasn't manager. It wasn't anything. Being the snarky guy that I can be, we were grumbling between coworkers, and I sent this email over with the definition of lead. And it was, I want to say it was something along the lines of, to be the person in charge that moves a group forward, extra line in front of a dog. And then my favorite definition was lead, LEAD, and it was dead weight at the end of a fishing line.
Oh, geez.
And because it's, can be led or lead. And so so we started referring to him as the team led. But that's kind of the thing, right? Like, you can be seen as either way when you're a leader. So what is the most valuable thing when you get into leadership to connect with a team and not have them feel like you're just, hey, I'm here as a figurehead?
Well, again, we've touched on it a little bit, but I think the big thing that I talk a lot about on my podcast and with people is, as a leader, pause, learn how to pause.
Mm. Yeah.
Learn how to listen and learn how to reflect and learn how to solicit ideas from other people. And there's a great example that I love to talk about with people. Dr. Alan Stern, who I've interviewed on the podcast, is the principal investigator on the New Horizons mission to Pluto.
Oh, wow.
And this was, it took 9 years, I believe, 9 years for the spacecraft to get to Pluto. And any signals that were sent from Earth would take 4.5 hours to get there.
Wow.
And 4.5 hours for the spacecraft to respond. And this spacecraft was not going to land on Pluto. It was simply going to take pictures. It was going to fly by Pluto. And what they were trying to determine was whether they needed to make a mid-course correction. Okay. as the craft was flying past Pluto to make sure that the cameras were focused the right way. And so he went around the room. He was sitting with all of his engineers, everybody on the team, and he solicited their input about whether we needed to make the correction or not, or were we going to be good enough? And that gets us back to what we've been talking about, right?
Yeah.
Do we need to be perfect, or can we be good enough to do this? So he paused and let everybody talk and got his information and then eventually made a decision.
Wow. That's, and it's hard as a leader, right? To actually pause, because we're in action mode. And especially something like that, where the ship has sailed, if you will. It's out there and it's moving. And so
it's every moving.
Time, yeah. Every time that you think about it, it's continuing to move. So our instinct, I feel like, is to not pause. We have to have action. Yet the solution is to slow down and say, wait, let's take a break. That's I love that. So have you found moments where you have paused and it's made a difference?
Sometimes if I do join Dennis's group, he pulls people together. Yeah. Melissa Hughes pulls people together. I find when I'm in a large group like that, I can invoke that, pause, sit back, listen to what other people are talking about versus having to be the first person to talk,
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it's interesting how People may see us in a certain light. They may see us as the leader, the action taker, the one who's pulling the group together. But then we step into a different role, or we walk into a different room, and now we are the listener. And I think it's important to be aware that you don't always have to be that same person, that same role. You can step in and out, and even with the same group of people, you can pick different times where it's my time to pause and listen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that is such a great group. If you are on LinkedIn, check out the Friendship Bench. They meet every week. I pop in and out of there as well. And I wanted to get last week and didn't work out for my schedule. And then I was talking to somebody, Ann Neville, who is just an amazing woman. And we were talking later that day. We had scheduled a call, and she mentioned something referring to the Friendship Bench. And I was like, oh, I wanted to get there today. And now I'm even more bummed that I didn't make it. And so it happens to line up with one of those times where it's tricky on my end. But it's been too long. I need to get back in there. So now we're back to Dennis. We are full circle right here.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, before we go, how would you challenge people to own their awkward, to step into themselves in the week ahead?
Oh boy, in the week ahead, that's a tough one, because as I said, Andy, one of the, besides the, you know, the Da Vinci epiphany, what really helped me was understanding where my awkward came from.
Yeah.
And it turns out context is my number one strength finder skill.
Okay.
Courtesy of Sarah Elkins, of course, right. You know, so that really helped me. Once I understood where it was coming from, it was an eye opener.
Fair. That makes sense, because if we can understand the why, then we can start to look at, you know, it doesn't necessarily change the situation in our head, but we can say, well, this is why I'm thinking this way. It doesn't mean that thinking this way serves me well all the time, but at least I understand how I got here.
Yeah. In my case, it was a learned behavior.
Okay.
You know, and you can unlearn.
Fair.
If it's not a productive skill.
Do you think that it is easier to learn or unlearn?
Oh boy. in my case, it took a long time to unlearn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, you know, the epiphany was only 2019. So,
right.
I mean, I was working on it before then, but it was really ingrained in me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think sometimes we might know that we want to unlearn a behavior, and we might be looking for that epiphany or not realizing that we're looking for that epiphany. And then we have it's like the gift of, oh, that's what I needed. That's the way I needed to view this in order to be able to make the next step in my uneducation, if you will.
Yeah. And it's also knowing where you want to be from a more productive standpoint. So it's looking at the past. Where did I learn this? But where do I want to be in the future? Because if I'm driving people crazy and it's unproductive, mm-hmm. and I'm impacting morale, that's not where I want to be. Right.
Right. And I really appreciate that you called out the Strengths Finder that Sarah has taught us so well, because if you are not familiar, Sarah is a Gallup certified Strengths Finder coach. And I took the test a few years ago before I visited her in Montana. And it was on one of those hikes up, you know, Mount.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And we're talking, and I remember exactly where we were, and she was describing one of my strengths. And she says, have you ever had this happen where, and the light bulb goes off of, yes, I have had that, and how people reacted. And when she can tie it to your strength, and then you understand where it's coming from, all of a sudden you go, oh my gosh, I am that guy. I do that thing. And
exactly.
And it becomes twofold, right? One is, how do you keep it from holding you back? But then, you know, being a perfectionist, whatever the thing is, how do you lean into it? Because there are times where you produce good work and you do a great job, and that's not a bad thing. So how do you then say, this is something I'm going to lean into in these moments and handle in other moments?
Yeah. What results do I want?
Right.
What's the path I want to walk to get there?
Yeah, and what's going to serve me the best in this situation?
Exactly.
Or the greater good, whatever you're working on, not necessarily me, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. Wow, Jeff, so much knowledge today, so many learnings. I'm going to be walking through this next week looking for those V8 moments. I'm going to go to the art museum here in town and be like, okay, is this my V8 moment? Where's the painting? What's the thing?
Yeah. I love your show, Andy, because, you know, it really makes you think, because we all have it. You know, we all have the awkwardness, right, in some area. And that's part of the way we grow, is by recognizing we've all got it, you know.
True. And,
you know, I'm not the only person who, you know, had Mr. Perfection leaning on my shoulder, you know,
yeah,
for exactly a long time, or so-and-so had a different awkwardness. You know, we all have them. And that's part of, like, taking the weight off.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that was when I got started doing this. It's kind of the same way you were describing, like, the podcast is educational for me, the way you were saying it is for you. Like, I want to hear people's stories and learn from them. And there were people that I looked up to, and then I would hear them say, oh no, I'm not feeling all that great about this, or I never used to, or I had to get over it. And I'm just like, wait, no, you're on my pedestal. Like, you can't have a flaw.
Right. And
I feel like that became so empowering to know that, wait, these people that we see doing awesome things are all human beings.
Exactly.
So, yep. Yeah. I appreciate that. Well, Jeff, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. We will continue to see you in all the things. And if I make it to New York, I'll definitely look you up for a cup of coffee or a beverage to catch up, try and pull you out of your retirement life for half.
Okay.
A month.
Yeah. My tough retirement life.
Right.
Thanks for the hour, Andy. And if I can swing Montana for Sarah's no longer virtual meeting, I'll do it, and I'll see you there.
We'll see you there. All right. Well, everybody else, be sure you go out there this week. Don't be perfect. Just be the best you can be. It's good enough. And as always, own your awkward.
There you go.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.